Welcome back. 516, 730 AM, 102.9 FM, WTNT. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And I'm joined now by Washington Times political editor Stephen Dinan. Hello, Mr. Dinan.
Hello, Andy.
All right, got a couple of things to talk to you about. One is a story that you just posted a little while ago. The federal government actually balanced its books in December. Are you kidding me?
Good news, huh?
How did that happen?
Tax revenue is up and spending has actually stayed about static, and so it's I track these monthly stats, and it's an indication of a better fiscal picture. It doesn't necessarily mean things are in good shape, but it means for 1 month we actually did pretty well, it looks like it's the first time that we have had this good a December since 2007, back when revenue was actually sort of doing really great. So if that's any indication, then federal finances are actually picking up a little bit.
All right, now how does that happen? Obviously, some good things have to happen.
Yeah, a couple things. One of the things that CBO, and this is by the Congressional Budget Office, which does these preliminary estimates. We'll get final numbers here from the Treasury Department in a little, I guess, later this week probably. But one of the things that they said is that a lot of withholdings. Essentially, people may have claimed or may have reported income now rather than waited for 2013. They may have reported in December rather than waited for 2013 on the off chance that the tax increases would go into effect or something. So some of this may be people essentially claiming income and claiming not illegally, but choosing to take those claims of that income from dividends or whatever in last year's rather than in this current year when the tax rates would likely be higher.
I gotcha. Okay. All right. I'm going to move on to something else. The fights on spending, taxes, and debt, obviously, that's the big deal coming up over the next month or two. Where do we stand right now? What do you see happening? What is the House doing? What is the Senate doing? How are they approaching these issues that they face, you know, as late as, what, 2 months down the highway?
So literally right now they aren't doing anything. They're both out of session. They came in for a couple of days, swore themselves in, and decided that was some good hard work and have gone home again. The House is out this week and they're back next week where they'll take up the more Hurricane Sandy spending. The Senate is out for the next 2 weeks. They'll come back just in time to come in for the inauguration of the president. So the very short answer is nothing. Now behind the scenes, you see a lot of posturing going on, and that's in particular Senate Republicans who took some of these tough votes for the tax deal and are taking a lot of heat for it are actually most out front now in saying that they would embrace the potential for a partial government shutdown. The Congress, and more importantly, the Republican Party, needs to be willing to stand firm and be ready for a partial government shutdown in order to get a handle on overall spending. So that's sort of their negotiating position. The White House has said it's not going to negotiate spending cuts or anything like that on the debt, which essentially means, which is part of the reason why Republicans are saying be ready for a partial shutdown, because if there's no negotiations, Republicans will be left with a take it or leave it proposition. Either you increase the debt without any trade-off for cuts, or else you don't increase the debt, and the government has to simply just stop spending more than what it takes in, which is part of the reason why that December number we just talked about is so interesting, because if the government can actually match its revenue with its spending each month, well, then there's no reason to increase the debt because you don't have any debt increase for that month. So that's one of the reasons why that's – if the government could actually do that for the next 9 years, man, we'd all be in good shape.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. Now, I did notice, and you were saying, you know, there's a lot of posturing going on. I noticed that some of the newcomers in both the House and the Senate have been out on some of the TV shows over the past 24 to 48 hours. Tom Cotton comes to mind of Arkansas. Let's see, who else? Ted Cruz, obviously.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah, and they have all, not just them, but others as well, have said, you know, we may just have to shut down the government, and it worked before, and it may work again. Now, Newt Gingrich, by contrast, came out on MSNBC and says the Republicans are going to cave. That won't happen.
Yeah, and now... I don't know exactly. I don't know whether I agree with Gingrich's analysis. I guess let's leave him. Let's leave his political prognosticating to the side for a moment.
Okay.
Just look at. You do have some very important voices. Most importantly, being Senator John Cornyn, who is now the number two ranking Republican in the Senate, who wrote an op-ed in the Houston Chronicle on Friday, also talking about partial shutdown. And you also have Senator Ted Cruz. You have Senator Pat Toomey, all of whom have used those words or similar words. You know, be ready for a shutdown. In some ways it could be a negotiating tactic, but there's also we talked about this a little bit back during the before the cliff deal. There was something to be said for Republicans who wanted to go over the cliff and then start. Essentially, you had all these spending increases and tax cuts. The federal budget actually, it was tough stuff to swallow, but the federal budget would have instantly been righted, and then from there you can decide, okay, now what taxes do we want to cut from this higher level, and what spending do we want to add back in from this lower level, and maybe we can actually come to some sort of sane federal budget at that point. Obviously we didn't do that. We ended up sort of punting on all those big decisions, but there's something to be said for going over, I guess, for having a partial shutdown, first of all, just because it focuses attention on, okay, the government really is spending all of this stuff, and what is the government spending on, which of these services are needed, and then from that point, you can sort of rebuild spending from that side up. And one other quick thing, there's what it means to have a partial shutdown is a little nebulous, and we've talked about there are a couple of different fights coming up. First is on the debt. Second is on the sequesters, since the deal from last week only delays by 2 months these automatic sequesters that are supposed to go into effect. And then the third is the annual spending bills. At the end of March, the annual spending bills have to be renewed. And each of those, the sequesters are sort of the minorest of those. We know that's about $100 billion in spending cuts, and that's all written into law. Would happen if we don't delay those. But the other two, the debt we talked about, that is an issue where if we don't raise the debt limit, we suddenly just we have to limit all new spending to the amount of money coming in. That's that could be a very small shutdown if government revenue does really well with the new tax increases. The biggest issue of all is that final one. It's the one coming up at the end of March, which is the annual spending bills. That's one where the president has to negotiate with Congress. It's clear that Congress has the power to the power of the purse to spend money or not spend money, and Congress could just decide not to pass those bills again. All the entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, those would still continue to be paid, but the basic, other government services, the parks would not stay open. Law enforcement actually would, the military would, but some of the other things, just the basic government operations mm-hmm. would cease, and that's the partial shutdown.
Okay. All right, Stephen, knowing that you are a political junkie extraordinaire, I wanted to ask you this question. I don't know if you can answer it, but I was laughing a little while ago because it occurs to me that the senior senator from Massachusetts could actually become Elizabeth Warren in a very short period of time. Is that about the fastest you've ever recalled? Because, obviously with Kerry, the presumptive nominee or the presumptive new Secretary of State would have to give up his post, meaning someone else would be appointed, and that would give her the senior status. Is that about as quick as you've ever seen?
Well, so it's a complex question, but no, I guess I would say the Morsia, we have a more recent example. The senator who was sworn in to take over for Daniel Inouye, Schatz, I believe, is his name. He was sworn in there, in December, and there was had already been an election for the other Senate seat from Hawaii. Daniel Akaka was the senior senator who'd been there for five terms or so, and then since he'd retired as of the January 3rd, and so the new senator was sworn in there. Senator Hirono, I believe. So Schatz, within, 2 weeks, went from a junior senator by five terms, 30 years or so, to being the senior senator with 15 days of experience.
Okay. So it's not all that strange.
No, when you have these special elections and stuff like that going on, you actually have instances where, some states have two elections at the same time, which is what Massachusetts would, that's not true, but there are other states where you have two elections at the same time, one to fill an expired expiring seat and the other for a full term. And the one that's to fill an expiring seat, usually that person takes office as soon as the election happens, while the other person takes office at the beginning of January.
Yeah.
So that's pretty regular.
Yeah. Okay, one final thing tonight. Immigration enforcement funding tops FBI and ATFs. Who knew?
Yeah, shocking. And you know, it suggests, this is a Migration Policy Institute report, and it suggests that the that we are pouring a lot of money into immigration enforcement, that it's become a very criminalized, you know, immigration is supposed to be a civil law, but it's become a very criminalized sort of process. Also interesting out of that report, though, is that when you control for inflation, spending actually peaked in 2009, which was the final year of President George W. Bush's budget, and has actually, you know, when controlled for inflation, has actually dropped about $2 billion or so, from nearly $20 billion to, I think it's $17.9 billion right now in the most recent fiscal year. So it sort of held steady at that level for a couple of years, which essentially means that we have seen we've already seen the maximum we're going to spend on immigration enforcement, and from here on out, the Obama administration seems comfortable with this somewhat slightly lower level, which means that those agencies are going to have to continue to do more with less.
Yeah, and of course we have this new immigration policy on the way, the one that he promised in his first term, and hey, you know, and by the way, is there a proposed plan?
No, he told David Gregory on his Meet the Press interview at the end of December that he would actually write legislation. The president said he would actually write legislation.
Okay.
That was sort of a major step, because that's something he'd avoided doing in his first term. He wanted to bless somebody else's plan, but never wanted to actually put his own skin in the game. And this time around, he said he will write a bill, and that's a major statement from him. So it'll be very interesting to see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm. All right, my friend, as always, thanks for your help on all of these stories, and we'll talk again.
My pleasure.
See ya. Stephen Dinan, Washington Times political editor, 5:28, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT.